Spring is in full swing, and summer is just around the corner. A great time for a beach getaway at the Oceanfront Boardwalk Plaza Hotel in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Enjoy the best of oceanfront accommodations and amazing dining right on the beach, both with great views of the ocean and boardwalk. Enjoy a soak in the heated indoor spa pool, or book the adults-only concierge level and relax in the rooftop hot tubs. Book online at BoardwalkPlaza.com or call 800-333-333 Beach. Thanks to the Boardwalk Plaza for being the Bridge Podcast Network sponsor.
You might have asked yourself, why do Christians celebrate Easter? But a couple days before that, Good Friday. Why do Christians celebrate Good Friday? That's our episode today. I'm Mark Dickey.
And I'm Bert Miller.
This is the Why Do Christians podcast. Hey, welcome to the show. My name is Mark Dickey. During the day, I host the afternoon show on the Bridge radio station.
By night, you're a crime fighter?
By night, I host the Why Do Christians podcast.
Oh, wow. Wow. The signal goes up in the air. And Mark is there.
That's right.
That's right.
My co-host is Pastor Bert Miller from Solid Ground Church. Bert, how are you today?
Mark, the sensation Dickey. I'm doing great.
Oh.
I just feel like... Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing well.
Yeah, I got to keep up with the fan mail.
Sure.
You know, sure. It's just, it's hard being me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I'm aware, man. I had to go through three layers of security to get in here with you today and schedule an appointment with your secretary.
Yeah, you even had to change your Google password.
That's right.
You're like, three-factor authentic. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so when this episode comes out, we will be... A few days, actually, it'll be the Sunday before Holy Week,
okay,
which is what we call the week before Easter. And most people have heard of Easter, whether they're celebrating the resurrection of Jesus or just hiding eggs and calling it a day. But then a couple days before Easter is Good Friday.
Right.
Are there any other days? What else is part of Holy Week?
Oh man! So there's Maundy Thursday,
that's right,
which commemorates the Last Supper. Yeah, then there's Good Friday. I'm not aware of anything in the traditions that I've been in that does anything on Saturday
or Monday or Monday through Wednesday.
I mean, well, so the previous Sunday, so actually when this is dropping, it's Palm Sunday.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, why don't you knit a cross for me
out of palms? Yeah.
So this question is not really that hard. Why do Christians celebrate Good Friday? Well, that whole cross thing, mm-hmm. It's like the icon of our faith.
Yeah.
Jesus died on the cross 3 days before Easter, which using their form of time
right.
is Friday. And so when Jesus died for our sins, that was Good Friday. That's a good thing.
Yes.
So that's it.
So we celebrate because Jesus died for us.
Yep.
Yeah.
But the question has to be asked, why did Jesus have to die at all?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, to answer that, I think maybe let's go way, way back.
Okay.
Right. So, because that is the center of the Christian faith, Jesus' death and resurrection. All of our beliefs hinge on the reality of those two, or you can consider it one event, his death and resurrection. Mm-hmm. Like that's a thing. In fact, the church leaders, they appeal to it over and over again. Let me just read you. This is a passage in 1 Corinthians 15 that the Apostle Paul writes, you know, within 30 years of Jesus' death and resurrection, he says this. He says, it's 1 Corinthians 15, starting verse 3. For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance. So like this is the main thing, that Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures, and that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day according to the scriptures. And so if we want to understand why Jesus had to die, the answer is right there. It's according to the scriptures. So
yeah.
Like, yeah. So like what, you know, the question is like, what did the scriptures teach about this? Right.
Like, yeah. Like we just watched Dune last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With all these prophecies and,
right.
Is it kind of like that where, you know,
well, in the sense that Jesus' death fulfills prophecies, yes, but it's more than that. It's that it fulfills the plan of God.
Okay.
So let's take it all the way back to the beginning of the Bible. I mean, Genesis One, you've got God creating the heavens and the earth, right? And then in Genesis 2, he creates this garden, Eden, right? And he puts the man and the woman in the garden. And Eden was this place where it's essentially an overlapping of heaven with earth. It's where heaven met earth. Mm. It's a place where human beings fellowshipped with God. And God creates the man and the woman to steward, cultivate it, and essentially he entrusts to them creation, right? And so you go forward in Genesis 2 and 3, and what happens is the man and the woman, they rebel. They choose their own way. They partner with this evil entity who's represented as a snake in the story, and there's a whole, thing with that. But they choose to reject God's reign in creation. And the way that they do that is there are two trees, right? There's a tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and there's the tree of life. And so God tells them, like, don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because in the day that you do that, you will die. Mm-hmm. And they choose to eat it, and they corrupt themselves with that. They make it so that they will be subject to death and sin and all this. And so you have this, this pronouncement from God in Genesis 3:19, where God says to the man, he says, by the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. And so death now enters creation because of the human being's sin. And that's why Paul can later in Romans 5 say, therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, and in the same way death came to all people because all sinned. And so human beings, they reject God's will and they reject God's offer of life. And so God is faced with the choice. I can either allow them to stay in the garden, but if they do that, they might eat of the tree of life and they would live forever in this corrupted state. And so he kicks them out of the garden and he places at the entrance of it this cherub, this angel with a sword, like a fiery sword. And so basically it's this idea of you can't come back in here, because if you come back in here, it will lead to a terrible state of existence forever. And so the only way back into the Garden of Eden is death.
Hmm.
All right. That's why the angel's there with the sword. It's why, by the way, I don't know if you remember. With this idea of what's God doing? What's the point of Good Friday? The goal is going to be, and it's the problem that goes through the rest of the Bible, how will humanity be restored to God? Right. Okay. So think about you go through the Old Testament and all right, so the first man, Adam, was unfaithful to God. Like, will there be a faithful covenant partner? Will there be a person who's faithful to God in creation? And over and over again in the Old Testament, you see a person who maybe this will be the person who will be faithful to God. And every single time, Moses, David, Abraham, Noah, Solomon, you go through all of them, they always fail. They always choose some rebellion against God. But God's goal is always to get them back into relationships, to get them back into Eden. So when you flash forward to the New Testament, all right, remember on Good Friday, there's a moment where Jesus is on the cross,
mm-hmm.
and there's a thief there, right, or a criminal. And he says to Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Remember that? And Jesus' response to him is, this is in Luke 23:43, he says, truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise.
Mm-hmm.
And that word that we translate paradise is the Greek word paradiso, and it means garden. So it's this idea of listen, I'm going to bring you back where you're supposed to be. So you've got this problem of Eden that God's basically like, you can't be here with me. So what I'll do is I'll find a way to restore you. And so going forward in the Old Testament, what you find is God sort of gives them glimpses and reflections of Eden. So you can have a taste of what's coming, but it's not the ultimate thing. So it starts with the Israelites in the wilderness with Moses, with what's called the tabernacle. And then later on, you've got the temple. And both of them, they're not just places of worship. They're reflections of Eden. So I'll give you some examples. There's this great article by a guy named Justin Taylor on the Gospel Coalition where he asked, what does the tabernacle symbolize? Is the name of the article. And he says this. He says, the tabernacle, like the Garden of Eden, is where God dwells. And various details of the tabernacle suggest it is a mini Eden. These parallels include the east-facing entrance, because in Eden, the entrance was on the east, guarded by cherubim, the gold, the tree of life, which would be the lampstand in there, the tree of knowledge of, of good and evil. That would be the law. Thus, God's dwelling in the tabernacle was a step towards the restoration of paradise, which is to be completed in the new heaven and the new earth. In fact, this is really neat to know. Like, if you were standing outside the tabernacle or later the temple, and you would look going into the entrance of, you know, the Holy of Holies, you'd like look going into the tabernacle and you would see the golden cherubim, it would remind you of the entrance of Eden because you'd see a cherub on each side.
Okay.
All right. So the idea is this, that like where God is, we cannot be because we've been corrupted by sin. Hmm. And so he's giving these foreshadowings of what's going to happen. I promise I'm going to like,
yeah, where? I'm like, all right, so where is Good Friday coming?
Right. Okay. Well, it's important to understand that they're like now with that like image in place, there's the language of clean and unclean.
Okay.
Right. So a big thing with the tabernacle and temple is that they are death free zones, right? So if they touch a dead person, they can't go in there until they're ritually clean, right?
Oh, so that's kind of like the like when Jesus was with the lepers, like the lepers get sent out town because, well, also you would get leprosy, but
yeah.
Okay.
And actually the cool thing with Jesus with that is he is so clean that when he touches a leper, the leper becomes clean.
That's awesome.
Isn't that awesome? Yeah. So what would happen is this, you'd find that like there would be this foreshadowing. So in order for somebody to go into the temple, or particularly like the Holy of Holies, like where the presence of God dwelled, to have this idea of a restoration to what Eden was, there would have to be a blameless representative who would surrender its life for the person going in. Huh. Okay. So like for them, it's symbolic in animal sacrifice, right? So you'd have like a blameless animal whose life would be taken, like their blood would be shed, and it was the life of the blameless animal that could appeal to God's mercy, because through that blameless life, the sin would be atoned for. Here's why. So in Leviticus 17:11, God says, "All right, like here's why there would be the sacrifice." He says, "For the life of a creature is in the blood, and I have given it to you to make atonement for yourselves on the altar. It is the blood that makes atonement for one's life." So in other words, if the animal dies for the human or on behalf of the human, and in place of them, it makes it so the sinful person can be reunited through death to God, because sin creates death. And so the only thing to get rid of sin is life.
Life in the blood, though. I mean, I guess I can see that. Like a car doesn't really work without oil. Like,
right.
But that seems... I feel like if I were to say that phrase to someone who is well educated, especially maybe a science professor at a university,
because
I had all these conversations when I was in college,
right,
you know, in my biology class, like, oh, well, isn't this how it is? And you'd be like, no, that's some made up business. Like, we've looked under microscopes, you know, there's life in really every part of the body, not just the blood. Like what? Right. How does that hold up today?
Well, I think, you know, if you're looking at it from just a microscope, right? So, we could be like, okay, you know, at the end of the day, what does blood do? It carries oxygen and keeps the body going for sure. But I think it's important to realize that biblically speaking, like within a biblical worldview, there are physical things, but there are all kinds of spiritual things that are happening that we don't see with the eye, right?
Okay.
And we get this. So, for instance, like if we're saying, all right, you know, life is just what we can observe. You know, let's talk about the idea of love. Right? You could make the case that all love is just chemicals in the brain. Like, you know, like the reason that we love people or love places, love things, whatever, like that, you know, that we fall in love or what have you, is because there are chemicals that are reacting in our minds. I think most of us would say, no, there's more to love than that.
Yeah.
Like there's a greater reality to love than just, hey, there's a chemical thing that's happening inside my physical brain. And so like when it comes to this idea of like life being in the blood, could we trace, you know, oxygen in the blood, sure. And yet we would say there's a greater reality behind that, that somehow, you know, whether you want to say mystically or spiritually, what have you, that there is life within the blood, that that's the place where something's life spiritually is found. And so when it comes to the idea, you know, of sin, this is the thing to realize, like, why is it that things are being killed for sin to be atoned for? And it's not that, you know, the animal's life is actually one for one for the humans. In fact, in Hebrews 10, verses 1-3, the author will go on to say, listen, the law is only a shadow of the good things that are coming, not the realities themselves. For this reason, it can never, by the same sacrifices repeated endlessly, year after year, make perfect those who draw near to worship. And listen to this. Verse 2 says, otherwise, would they not have stopped being offered. For the worshipers would have been cleansed once for all and would no longer have felt guilty for their sins. In other words, if the animals being sacrificed actually atoned for the people, then why would they have to keep being repeated? Because like if the sin is atoned for, like why does the person have to keep getting this done over and over and over again? Mm. And then the author says, no, in verse 3, but those sacrifices are an annual reminder of sins. In other words, they were showing that there's a greater reality going on, that God would have to get rid of our sin by blood, but a blood that the world hadn't seen yet.
Hmm.
I love there's this article by the Bible Project called Why Did Jesus Have to Die?
Yeah.
And they said this. They said, through all these instructions about animal offerings, God is showing people how real death happens as a result of their choices that oppose God's will. In other words, like when things are being killed, it's showing like sin has real consequences. Like it really is creating death. It really is breaking the world. And so the article goes on to say that it says they experience the tangible and bloody consequences, but they also see how God wants to preserve human life through death. A representative goes through the flames on behalf of another, surrendering and preserving life. Because, you know, they would kill the animals, they'd burn, what have you. And so the idea of like for a person to come into the presence of God, sacrifices would be made.
Mm-hmm.
And from the jump, like what's being shown here is that's what it's going to take for us to be restored to God. A sacrifice will have to be made. If sin has brought death, then the only way restoration can be achieved and relationship restored and sin being covered would be through blood. So it says, the article, they go on to say, it's like God has engineered a kind of death that does not ultimately destroy the human. It's a death that overcomes death.
Hmm. Bert, all I'm thinking about right now is how you said that, like, life force is in my blood.
Yeah.
And therefore, if I donate blood, am I sharing my faith?
Oh, Mark. Oh, Mark.
And what happens if I get a blood transfusion?
Yeah, yeah.
Probably shouldn't overthink that.
Probably not. Yeah. Hey, Mark, do you like commercials?
I do.
Don't we all?
Wouldn't it be great if we had a sponsor for this podcast?
Mark, nothing would make me happier.
Well, you could sponsor this podcast by contacting us at podcast@wearethebridge.org. You could be a hot dog stand.
A cheese grater company.
You could sell furniture.
Or Wi-Fi.
Contact us at podcast@wearethebridge.org.
I think that's it. I think we got it.
Okay, so now we understand why there are animal sacrifices in the temple.
Uh-huh.
Why do we celebrate Good Friday?
Okay, so I know. It sounds like out of left field. All right, so we've got this idea of, hey, something that's pure and spotless is going to die on behalf of the sin of humanity. That this is like this reoccurring prophecy through action over and over and over again. So when Paul said way back in the beginning, you know, Jesus died according to the scriptures, this is a thing that all of that is setting up. In fact, all of it ultimately is setting up the person of Jesus coming into the world. So think, even like you go back to the tabernacle being established and later the temple, like there's this place where what God says way back in Exodus 25, verse 8, with Moses and the Israelites, where when he's talking about this thing being built, this tent, like, and think about how, you know, like what are our bodies called over and over again in the New Testament? They're called earthly tents, right? So way back, the tabernacle is viewed as this place where God will come and dwell. Exodus 25, verse 8 says, then have them make a sanctuary for me, and I will dwell among them, or I will make my dwelling among them. Mm. All right. Now, here's why that's important. You jump forward to the New Testament, the gospel. And in the beginning of the gospel of John makes this startling claim that is meant to remind you of that verse I just read to you in Exodus.
Okay.
So he says, like, I'll make my dwelling among them in Exodus 25, verse 8. All right, in John 1, he talks about Jesus coming into the world. And, you know, he says, like, the Word was with God, the Word was God. And then in John 1:14, he said, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us.
Mm.
And so what that's meant to tell you is, listen, that temple has come in a person. It's why, like, It's what, like where God is going to be, his relationship with humanity, that's coming in the person of Jesus Christ. It's why you think about, you know, on Good Friday, in the Gospel of Matthew, there's a moment when it says, like, when Jesus died, this is Matthew 27, that the curtain of the temple, this like 50-foot tall thing, was torn in half from top to bottom. What was behind it was like the Holy of Holies. It's where only the high priest could go. It was where, you know, like the sacrifice would allow a person to enter into God's glory. But now that barrier has been eradicated, okay, because Jesus has come to bring us back into the presence of God. And so here's why this is why Jesus had to die. All right. Because the only way for someone to be restored in relationship to God, the God of the garden, like way back, is for death to happen. All right. And so Jesus, God, chooses to die to make that happen.
Hmm.
All right. Like you couldn't get into the garden without being killed because of sin. All right. You couldn't get into the temple or the tabernacle without death taking place. And that was foreshadowing something greater. And now here it is. That Jesus's blood, like the infinite blood of the Son of God, like in terms of like the power of it, right? Like his sinlessness. Okay. If you've got this almost immeasurable debt of sin, this almost immeasurable death or like you know, sort of chasm of brokenness and evil in the world. You talk about the whole of humanity's sin. Then the only thing that could cover and undo that death would have to, like, if that's near infinite, the only thing that could cover all of it would be the infinite blood, the life of the Son of God.
Wow.
Right? And that's exactly why Paul, he says in 2 Corinthians 5:21, he says, God made him who had no sin to be sin for us so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. The only thing, this is so crazy to think about, that could cover the infinite, the near infiniteness of sin is the infiniteness of God's life. And because of his great love for us, God died in our place. Even though he never sinned, Jesus opened a way for us to return to God through the life of his blood.
And that's why we call it good.
That's why we call it good, man. It was, I mean, you know, like we talk about the gospel, which, you know, is the Greek word euangelion, it means good news. This is the good news that God has died for us to give us life. And it's even better because, if, you know, we'll talk about this on Easter, that he's conquered death through death. Like the death that was brought through sin, his death made life.
So why don't we call it Great Friday?
Maybe we should. Mark, if you put in a petition with...
It's good, but it could have been better.
Put in a petition on change.org with the world, and we'll see if we can get it going.
Can we call it Perfect Friday?
Sure.
Because that's probably better. So if you're listening to this when it first come out, it is Holy Week. You got a little bit of time before Easter, and hopefully you can go into this Good Friday really understanding what it's about.
Yeah.
And something really neat, maybe I could challenge you with before we go, is all four of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all have the death and resurrection of Jesus in them, which is really neat. And they're all written slightly differently.
From different angles, you mean? Yeah.
Yes, different perspectives. And I want to encourage you to maybe take a look at those.
That is such a good idea.
Like, if it's Sunday, how about between Monday through Thursday, each day you know, grab Matthew and read the death and resurrection there. Yeah. And then on Tuesday, go into Mark, read the death and resurrection, and see that there's a lot more to this story than what you were told as a 5-year-old in Sunday school.
Yeah. You know, man, I think a good practice with that too, like as you're reading it, sometimes it's easy to just like gloss through that and be like, oh yeah, Jesus died. But if you view it within the scope of, man, the sin of the world is so wicked that this is what it took to get rid of it. Like the brutal suffering of the Son of God. I think it also creates in you a spirit of repentance and humility towards God that, well, you know, sometimes what we can do is we can minimize our own sin and, oh, it's not that bad. But to realize, like, no, this is what sin creates. Mm-hmm. I think it creates a turning in us and also an appreciation of God's love for us. It doesn't create like a, oh man, I, you know, how could God ever love me? It creates a celebration. Wow, even though I've done this, this is his love for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I love that idea of just like chewing on those texts and really, really soaking in them.
Yeah. So that'll about do it for this episode. If you have questions, we would love to hear them. podcast@wearethebridge.org. Just email them there. Make sure in the subject you put "Why do Christians?" so that it gets to us. But if you want to... if you have questions about Good Friday or you want to suggest a future episode, we'd love to hear that. And we hear all the time from friends that they actually listen to these episodes with their kids. And something fun, if maybe your kids have their own questions.
Send them in.
Yeah. Even if it maybe it's a question that you might be able to answer for your kids. But I don't know. Maybe there's other kids asking these questions that us grownups think, oh, we don't need to make an episode about that, but really it would help somebody. So whether it's you or your kids, send the questions in to podcast@wearethebridge.org. Thanks for listening.